Anashastra vicharana kanipana sadharma samstapato lokananitakarino tribhuvane manyo sharanyakaro Radha Krishna padaravinda bhajana nandena mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghujaka Sri Jiva Gopalaka.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures, with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they're honored all over the three worlds, and they're worth taking shelter of, because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis, and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Shishat Goswami Prabhu Ki Jai. So we got quite a lot of verses to give out today. That a very advanced devotee who's free from, basically in a liberated position, free from material desire, may find himself or herself attracted to the particular type of service or the particular service of a certain resident of Vrindavan, perhaps Nanda Maharaj or Mother Yashoda, or perhaps one of the gopis, the young gopis, or perhaps one of the cowherd boys, they'll find a natural attraction to this form of devotional service and as performed by a certain individual within that group of devotees, they'll find themselves attracted like that. This, of course, is in terms of one's natural eternal relationship with the Lord. So that can only happen on a very elevated level, a very advanced level of sadhana bhakti. It's still within the realms of practice, but relatively very advanced. So then internally, through a process of meditation, then one will begin to learn and practice rendering service in that way, actually under the direction of that person, that eternal associate of the Lord. So this is certainly quite an extraordinary process, Raghunuga Sadhana, the practice of devotional service following those who have Rag. Rag meaning that overpowering attraction to the Lord in a mood of love, which, due to its power, obscures the fact that the Lord is God and makes the devotee focus on the Lord just in terms of the rasa, which they're exchanging between them. So this is the basic idea. And we made the point that it's a stage in a sense, meaning it's a higher stage of sadhana than Vaidhi Bhakti, in a certain sense of the term of Vaidhi Bhakti. In other words, a person who begins devotional service from the beginning will begin with Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And then they may go on to Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti in time, when they have become quite advanced in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. But that also depends. It's not that necessarily everyone is going to eventually go on to Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti and then advance to love of God or to Bhava and then love of God through Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti necessarily. That depends. That depends on what one's eternal relationship with Krishna is. if one's eternal relationship is of that nature, in other words, in Vrindavan, then yes, that will naturally happen. But if one's eternal relationship with the Lord is not in Vrindavan, again, it appears also in Dwarka to some extent, but mainly we're talking about Vrindavan. So if your eternal relationship with the Lord is in Vaikuntha somewhere, then one will not go through Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, but one will advance more and more through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and come to the level of bhava, ecstasy, or actually the beginnings of love of God beyond sadhana, beyond practice. One will come to that level through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And in that same mood of following rules and regulations and serving the Lord because He's God, in a mood of awe and reverence, and not just in that mood of sweetness and intimacy, the devotee can go on to the level of prema and go back to Godhead. So, it's not that necessarily Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti is like a universal thing which everyone goes through as they gradually advance, but only some people. And it's practiced internally, while externally the devotee remains as a strict, regulative devotee. So there won't be so much external manifestations. Not so much, really. Of course, there'll be obvious symptoms that the devotee is advanced in the way they render service and the way they're attracted to devotional service. But it's not that, particularly it's not, that they're actually going to practice following in the footsteps of some inhabitants of Vrindavan externally. There was one known case of one person who became involved with some, I guess you would say, sahajiyas of some sort. I don't even know who exactly, but some type of upper sampradaya group here in Vrindavan. And he was given the Siddha Pranali initiation. He was told his relationship with Krishna was that he was a peacock. So every day he would lock the door to his room and practice being a peacock, until some devotees realized that this was going on. And then I don't know actually what happened after that, but it wasn't very well taken, because this is not the process. This is not the process. It's internal only. And externally, the devotee remains like normal, like a regulated devotee. Although obviously an advanced, regulated devotee, very absorbed, very dedicated, very advanced, and very Krishna conscious. But the actual practice of the Raghunuga is all internal. Yes?
So this Siddha Pranali practice was not recommended, and it's not in the scriptures at all, or was it concocted along the way?
Well, the thing is, there are cases of it, not just cases, but there's a history of the practice of it amongst very, very elevated devotees going back in time. There's a history of it. And in fact, it was done in so many cases that the devotee was told that you are actually such and such, and then they have some realization of it just by the potency of the instruction. And, I mean, of course, they're also very, very advanced at the same time. And then they begin the practice under direct instruction. Actually, one devotee asked Prabhupada, "What's my eternal relationship with Krishna?" Prabhupada got very angry and chastised him. Then later that day, Prabhupada said to him that when the time is right, I will tell you what your relationship is with Krishna. But the idea that someone like, and I mean literally like, we have young boys and girls joining our temples all over the world and taking up the practice of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti or Sadhana Bhakti, they take up Krishna consciousness, and then after a year or two or three or so, then they get initiated, first initiation, and in this way, this is going on. This is the normal practice. So, what it has degenerated, this Siddha Pranali idea, what it has degenerated into, in fact, is that first initiation means that. So you can just imagine. I mean, many of you are initiated, some of you aren't. And you can just imagine this on a very practical level. How relevant would it be to you? So there was a practice in circles in which the aspiring devotees were very advanced and were beyond the influence of the material nature. First initiation means that. Just like in our case, first initiation means you get your name, such and such das. And you get your beads. You know, there's certain elements which are there. So the practice of Siddha Pranali is degenerated to that. That is just the standard thing. You get your name and your beads, I guess, and your swaroop and all the various details of it. Yeah? So with people who are not on this platform of liberation, it'll only serve to confuse them. And then plunging them into a type of practice, which in many cases means it's internal meditation. So in many cases it means they have to meditate on the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And there's one case, there was one time when a small group of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's sannyas disciples complained to him that when we read certain parts of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find we get a little disturbed. Some little material attraction arises. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati forbade them from reading those parts of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. What to speak of some of these other literatures, which go into much, much greater detail of the actual intimate interactions of Radha and Krishna and so on. So these young people who have got as many material desires as any of us, in other words, they've got plenty of material desires, now they're meditating on all these things, and it's not actually, Prabhupada said that it won't bring purification, it'll bring putrefaction. It'll actually inflame the lusty desires and not reduce them and not deepen one's Krishna consciousness. It'll increase the lusty desires. So therefore, one of Prabhupada's main complaints about the Radhakund Babajis was that in quite a number of cases, they keep girlfriends. In quite a number of cases, they keep girlfriends. And there's this occasional pregnancy problem and so on and so forth. We were at Radhakund the other day, on Monday. So I don't know if you noticed when we were going around, there were various kind of pretty much elderly ladies begging by the road. There was a few of them here and there. So they have their little bowl or their little cloth or something on the ground, and people throw some money or some grains in. And if you look, I don't know if any of you looked very closely, but if you look, you'll see some people throw beadies in. And here's the lady with her bowl or cloth with her few paisa coins and things and some rice and dal and a beadie. So, you know, and I've seen some of them actually at Radhakund, some of the elderly ladies smoking beedies. So, you know, such people, if they get into this practice prematurely, before they're liberated, then it'll just inflame all their whole material condition. Therefore, you know, it's basically a failure. In fact, at least from what I'm told, maybe some of those of you who are more local could tell us that the Babaji population is not increasing. The only increase that there is when certain people who once joined ISKCON and left, then they go and join the Babaji's, isn't it? I know it goes on. I've seen a few. But, you know, wait a minute, that fellow, when I was here 6 months ago, he was in the Krishna Balaram temple. Now he's at Radhakund. Anyway. So that's the idea. Any other questions or comments about that subject? Yes, Fatima? Oh. Yes, well, it's an overpowering attraction to Krishna in a mood of love, and it's so powerful that it basically overrides, or one's consciousness of Krishna is simply in terms of the relationship, the loving relationship. Yeah, in one of the rasas, in other words. And that overpowers one's consciousness of Krishna as God.
There's one instance in Ramayana, Mr. Deva Narsingha Hanuman was ready,
but yes.
But there's one instance in Ramayana where one devotee called Sabri.
Who?
Sabri.
Oh, Sabri, the hunter?
No.
Okay.
She's a lady that.
Yeah.
Waiting for Rama separation. And then she was giving her fruits that she was having a taste.
Right.
So, I couldn't understand. Is she also very lucky? Or?
Well, it's possible that some people in Ram Leela, like Dasarath, that the element of rag may enter. That Dasarath, his attachment is to Ram in the sense of his being his son. At least that element is there. So that may be there in some cases. It may be there in some cases. Yeah. The general mood in Ram Leela, or any Leela outside of the Goloka Vrindavan realm, which is Gokula, Dwaraka, and Mathura, generally you don't see it. It's generally unknown. But the basic mood is that in the ecstasy of the particular loving relationship that becomes so powerful that one's absorption in the loving relationship, I mean, we only have a certain amount of consciousness, and if it becomes sufficiently absorbed in one thing, then there's no more to get absorbed in anything else. So it becomes so absorbed in the loving relationship with Krishna that awareness of other features of Krishna's nature become lost. Just like the examples there of Mother Yashoda at, what's the name of the place we went to? Something or other, Brahmanda Ghat. That Mother Yashoda was checking whether Krishna had been eating dirt. She looked in Krishna's mouth and saw the universe. Then she realized that Krishna was God. And she was quite astonished. And actually, the intensity of her love dropped because, you know, this mood of awe and reverence started coming in. But then it's described in the Bhagavatam that she was looking in his mouth and then looking at his face, thinking, my son, you know, and then looking in the mouth, God, then looking in the face, my son, God, like that. But then as she was looking into his eyes, his beautiful eyes, and she found them so attractive that she, you know, didn't look back into the mouth again. She just became, like, very attracted to his eyes. Then the idea that he was God started fading away. Because that maternal mood in the relationship with Krishna started to overpower it. Yeah. If there, you know, to whatever extent, say in Ram Leela, there may be or appear to be rag, it's just not on the same. Anyway, it would just be a much lower level, very much lower level, and quite rare, very, very rare. So, there's the hunter, actually. I forget, is it Guhaka? Guhaka? Haka? Or someone? He is in Sakyaras, and it's described that his relationship with Ram is like that, that he doesn't really have so much of a conception of Ram as God, in the mood of friendliness. So now we're going to go on, if it's okay, we'll go on to a brief discussion of Bhava Bhakti, which is discussed in chapters 17 and 18. And I hope you read chapters 17 and 18 of Nectar of Devotion. We've given you one sheet of verses. Let's see. The top verse is the definition. And Prabhupada has paraphrased the definition in the first paragraph of chapter 17. Shuddha Sattva Visheshatma Prema Suryangsu Samyavak Ruchibish Chitamasrinya Krida Sao Bhava Uchite. When devotional service is situated on the transcendental platform of pure goodness, it is like a ray of the sunlight of love for Krishna. At such a time, devotional service causes the heart to be softened by various tastes, and it is called bhava, or emotion. And this is Lord Chaitanya speaking to Sanatana Goswami in the 23rd chapter of the Madhyalila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And you can see in the first paragraph of this 17th chapter, Prabhupada is basically paraphrasing that translation with a couple of interesting other points. First of all, he says, by the process of executing regulated devotional service, this is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, one is actually elevated onto the transcendental stage beyond the material modes of nature. In other words, this is corresponding with the first line of the translation, devotional service on the transcendental platform of pure goodness. At that time, one's heart becomes illuminated like the sun. The sun is far above the planetary systems, and there's no possibility of its being covered by any kind of clouds. Similarly, when a devotee is purified like the sun, from his pure heart there's a diffusion of ecstatic love, which is more glorious than the normal sunshine which we're used to. So this is the idea. In the rest of the verse, pretty much. So this is the basic idea. The heart becomes softened and various emotional states manifest. So there are two categories of characteristics here of bhava. There's one primary characteristic, and that is Shuddha Sattva Visheshatma. The primary characteristic of Bhava Bhakti is that it's devotional service on the platform of Shuddha Sattva. In other words, it's actually on the transcendental platform in all respects. It's not just the practice of devotional service, but it's devotional service which is completely on the platform of transcendence, Shuddha Sattva. So that's characteristic number one. Perhaps I should write these on the board.
So primary is Shuddha Sattva, that part of it, devotional service on the level of pure goodness. And secondary, there's two, that the heart is softened. You should know these. And it's softened by the experience of various tastes.
Various tastes means like various moods, like that. Various feelings towards Krishna. And actually there's three tastes. I'll just put them here very briefly. There's a desire to achieve Krishna. These are from Jiva Goswami's commentary. There's a desire to please Krishna by rendering so many services. And there's a desire to be close at heart with Krishna. So that these are the three various tastes or various feelings, various moods, which soften the heart due to the fact that one is on the level of complete transcendence, absorbed in one's devotional activities. So, okay. It's the first ray of the sun of love of God. So in other words, what does that mean, bhava is? It means that bhava is prema. When we talk about bhava and prema, we talk of not two things really, in one sense, ultimately. We talk of one thing, but just two levels. One is the very beginning level, and the other is the complete level. Just as much as if you go and stand out in the sun rays now, you get the full impact of the sun. But when you go out early in the morning, maybe at about 6 o'clock or something like that, then that which is beginning to illuminate things is the same thing as what you can go out into now and really feel in quite an intense way. But if you go out at 6 o'clock, there's just almost like a hint, really. Certainly a much less developed or much less manifest form of the same thing, which is very powerfully beaming in now. So we're talking about 2 degrees of the same thing, or the fact that bhava is a lesser degree of that one thing, which is prema. So therefore bhava, the level of bhava, is considered perfection. It's not practice. It's not like a different thing. The practice, sadhana bhakti, is a different thing. But bhava bhakti means perfection. Devotional service on the level of perfection. But it's just that the perfection isn't fully manifest. Therefore, the symptoms of bhava, or bhava meaning ecstasy. This word bhava means ecstasy, ecstatic emotion, like that, ecstatic love. This is the idea. So, the symptoms which manifest on the level of bhava, meaning the emotional symptoms, they are the same symptoms which are manifest on the level of prema, but just less. Therefore, at the bottom of page 131, we, to illustrate this point, and it's an interesting and important point, therefore the example of Maharaj Ambarish is given, that I'm sure we all know this episode from Srimad Bhagavatam 9th canto. He was doing some yajna or some ritualistic ceremony, and Devasa Muni came in at a critical moment at the end and apparently interrupted or was going to interrupt, something like that. So anyway, I'm sure we all know the story. So here, what is being described at the bottom of page 131 is when Devasa Muni got to the point of becoming very angry and started to do something towards Maharaj Ambarish, something really antagonistic. And Maharaj Ambarish realized that, oh, now I'm really in trouble. So this is what's being described here. Prabhupada says, if you have a look, you'll see, not always, oh, well, let's just start a little higher up. In this connection, there's a statement in the Tantras that ecstasy is the first symptom of pure love for the personality of Godhead. And in that stage, one is sometimes found shedding tears or shivering. Sometimes. This is Bhava. Sometimes. Not always are these symptoms manifest, but occasionally. When King Ambarish was put into difficulty by Devasa, he began to think of the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus there were some changes in his body, and tears were falling from his eyes. These symptoms are activities of ecstasy or bhava. They're visible in the shivering of the body and the shedding of tears. So the thing is that Maharaj Ambarish, when he saw that this situation has developed and it looks very dangerous and unpleasant, so he fixed his mind on Krishna. He really took shelter of Krishna. And as is described here, when he did that, then these symptoms manifest. And this is bhava. These bhavas manifest. As opposed to, there's no specific example here, but the idea is that as opposed to someone who's on the level of prema, who's always experiencing these bhavas. The level of prema, anyway, we're going to discuss it tomorrow, but on the level of bhava, there are a number of bhavas, there are a number of ecstasies, different types of ecstasies. On the level of bhava, they occasionally manifest, and then sometimes they're not manifest. On the level of prema, they're always manifesting, they're always manifest, and they're mixing. Two, three, four, even all five mix. Actually, the mixing of them... Not at all. So when they mix, they produce, what do they produce? Rasa. Rasa in the sense of taste. Rasa means that which is produced from the mixing of the bhavas. But when one is on the level of bhava, they're not really mixing so much. Just occasionally one is coming, occasionally another, like this. Whereas on the level of prema, it's described as being something like an ocean with waves. Up and down, and then the waves are meeting and crashing together. And it's very dramatic. And it produces rasa, the mixing of the bhavas. But on the level of bhava, when the devotee is on the level of bhava, these ecstatic symptoms are coming occasionally. And this example is given here of Maharaj Ambarish. Normally he wasn't crying, shivering. But then when this situation occurred and he fixed his mind on Krishna, then it came. And then one would assume that later on when it all got sorted out, then again these things subsided. So this is one of the great differences, like manifest differences between bhava and prema. Any questions on that? It's a little bit difficult thing to ask questions about, perhaps.
In this part, Prabhupada says in the same paragraph, just above the line, he said, within the stage of regulated principles of devotional service, there are two divisions, namely executive and effective.
Well, executive means that you do your devotional service, and effective means bhava, the ecstasy, which comes and which stimulates one on. If we were not experiencing any ecstasy, not that we can say we're on the level of bhava, but if there was absolutely none, it was just we were just doing rules and regulations only with no result. You can just imagine all day if you're told, all right, we want you, first of all, to walk to the shops, then turn around and walk back. And then walk down the road, then up the road, then climb a tree, and then come back. So now there's no ecstasy in it. It's just a rule. Do this, do that. So it's going to be very dry. Now in devotional service, we're following the rules and regulations. That's a fact. But then there's some effect of ecstasy which comes, and that stimulates us on. Otherwise, if it was just dry, just doing this but not doing that just for the sake of it, there wouldn't be any stimulation to carry on. So it's in that sense. Okay, so let's go on to page 132. Prabhupada explains that coming to the level of bhava is possible in two ways. One way is constant association with pure devotees. The other way is by special mercy of Krishna or a pure devotee. So here are two ways. Then Prabhupada goes on to explain that... In the next sentence, actually. Elevation to the ecstatic stage of life is generally attained through association with pure devotees, while elevation to that stage by the special mercy of Krishna or his devotee is very rare. So the basic idea is that we all should just stick at our practice of devotional service in the association of devotees, and that is the best thing to do. And if one does this very, very nicely, very, very seriously, then in due course of time, gradually one will advance and come to the level of bhava. Now, then Prabhupada goes on to illustrate the idea that it's better to do that rather than just think, well, I think I'll go the mercy route. I won't bother sticking with the devotees, I won't bother rendering devotional service so much. I'll just wait till I get the mercy and then I'll get bhava. So Prabhupada says this idea is something like, if you want a university degree, that instead of going and taking the course and completing the course and getting your degree, that you don't go to the university, but you just wait thinking, well, sooner or later, maybe they'll give me an honorary degree. It happens. People get honorary degrees. It definitely happens. But doesn't happen very much at all. So this is the difference. Therefore, it's really, I mean, the basic idea is just carry on in your devotional service. And then any mercy that comes anyway will just be all the better. Otherwise, the idea is, actually the next sentence explains, the purport is that one should execute devotional service rigidly in the association of devotees, so that there will be certainty in raising oneself to that ecstatic position, to the position of bhava. Now, rigid execution of devotional service, what does this mean in terms of shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anatha nivritti, nishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava and prema? What do you think it means? Devotional service on what level? Minimum. No, because then there's still anathas, so it won't be rigid, it can't be rigid. Nishta, at least nishta. Yeah. Rigid, the performance of rigid devotional service is only possible on the level of nishta. While anathas are still remaining, one will be forced to go up and down to some extent. And, yeah. An interesting point, actually, I should have mentioned it, but somehow we skipped over. Just going back to the first paragraph on page 131, it's a very interesting point, that on the level of bhava, here we are, three or four lines up from the bottom of the first paragraph, that the devotee is eager to serve the Lord in his ecstatic love, in his mood of bhava. At this stage, the devotee is on the platform of Uttama Adhikari. In other words, Madhyam Adhikari extends up to and includes Asakti, and Uttama Adhikari begins with bhava. I mean, pure Uttama Adhikari. There's also like Madhyam interim stage of going from Madhyam to Uttama, which is like more like Asakti, like that. But bhava, Uttama, actual Uttama Adhikari means on the level of bhava. Or in other words, Uttama Adhikari means perfect, no longer just practicing. So you should know these two ways that a devotee can come to the level of bhava. Constant association with pure devotees, or actually, anyway, an alternative rendering is, just like you see at the very first sentence of this chapter, by the process of executing regulated devotional service, one is actually elevated to bhava. And I just read, the purport is that one should execute devotional service rigidly in the association of devotees. So it basically means, really, the whole way of life of devotional service. Not that you simply associate with devotees only, but you don't render any service. So that's one way. And the other is by special mercy of Krishna or his pure devotee. You should know those two. Then, next, going back to page 132, the last bottom paragraph, actually for the rest of this chapter, in fact, Prabhupada is giving different examples of different devotees who came to the level of bhava in these different ways. Everything okay, Swarup? I thought you weren't clear on something there. Okay. All right. So now from the bottom of page 132 or so till the end of the paragraph, Prabhupada is giving different examples. First example is the example of someone who came to the level of bhava by association or by serving in association like this. And it's the example of Narada from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Again, I'm sure you're familiar with that example. He associated with and served those great Bhakti Vedantas, very advanced devotees who came to stay at his mother's house in Chatamasya. And by their association, he came to the level of bhava. Then, on page 133, the second or third paragraph, this statement is also confirmed in 3.25.25. This is a well-known verse, important verse in the Bhagavatam. What is it? Satam prasangam mama virya samvada bhavanti hrit karana rasayana kata, and so on. It's saying, Kapila is speaking to Devahuti, my dear mother, when a person is actually in association with pure devotees, the sublime potency of my devotional service can be experienced. So Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami, the idea here is they're stressing the value of association with very advanced devotees, that their advancement is transmitted, or that because of their advancement they have great potency to penetrate to the heart. And in this way, bhava is aroused. So these various quotations, examples, they are along the lines of coming to bhava through association, through serving in association like that. Then, bottom of page 133, and going over to 134, there's a discussion about people who came to bhava through mercy of Krishna or pure devotee. And this, in fact, it's explained that there are three ways of getting that mercy. You can get it through the ringing of the bell, maybe. You can get it by speaking. Krishna speaks, and then it has such an effect, or you get such mercy, that you come to the level of bhava, or his devotee speaks. Or Krishna or his devotee glances at you. Or Krishna or his devotee offer their heartfelt good wishes. So then examples are given. The first example is of speaking. Lord Krishna speaking to Narada. Of course, we just heard that Narada came to the level of bhava by the association of those Bhakti Vedantas. But anyway, looks like he also came to the level of bhava by Lord Krishna speaking to him. Lord Krishna is saying that I want you to come to the level of Baba, basically. And the understanding is that Narada then came to the level of Baba. Then over onto 134, the inhabitants of the Jungala province saw Krishna, and by their glancing on Krishna, they came to the level of Bhava. So they got some special mercy from Krishna. Then heartfelt good wishes, this is Narada expressing good wishes actually to Shukadeva or about Shukadeva. He's telling Srila Vyasadeva that basically he's expressing some good wishes about your son Shukadeva, and the understanding is that as a result Shukadeva came to the level of Bhava. And anyway, there are different examples, there are other examples, but this is the these are the basic ideas. This is the honorary process. Oh, in many cases, yes. Oh, yes, same idea. Definitely, definitely. Oh, they'd see him and they'd come to the level of prema, even. Not just bhava. That's also possible. When we come to the discussion on prema, we'll see that the same thing is possible with regard to prema. That someone, instead of just coming up to bhava, they can come right up to prema by just by some mercy without any real qualification.
This is again a permanent state, or it's just then they get it and then after some time it
ceases? To tell you the truth, I'm not entirely sure because it's not discussed here, but all the examples which are given here are permanent, but I don't know about the inhabitants of the Jungala province. But definitely Shukadeva and Narada, they're permanent. Yeah, they're definitely permanent. And Prahlad, I mean, there are other examples given. Prahlad is another example. He, also in his case, it was permanent. So, let's see. I think we'll stop here because it's after 11 and we'll just carry on with Bhava tomorrow and go on to Prema. Any other questions? Oh, Prabhupada hearing Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, right. I don't know. But he was hearing. You'd have to ask him exactly how it worked in his case. Thing is, Prabhupada also expressed his heartfelt wishes to all living entities. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure this is something which works on many different levels in many different ways. Here we're getting some very prominent examples. Very, very prominent examples. But, you know, so many people, when they first saw Srila Prabhupada. I mean, I saw myself the first time, well, actually it was the second time I saw Prabhupada, but for a number of the devotees who were there, it was the first time they were seeing Srila Prabhupada. I saw him before I joined. So, anyway, when Prabhupada came, so many devotees were crying. Now, this is a symptom of bhava. It is definitely a symptom of bhava, but on a very, you know, like undeveloped level. But simply by seeing Prabhupada, he hadn't said anything yet. They simply saw him and it was just, you know, overpowering. So this is like what Prabhupada was saying on, where is it, page 133, about this verse 325-25. Sort of in the middle of page 133, that when people hear in the association with pure devotees, then there's a certain potency which enters the heart of the audience, and it can at least stimulate the audience. not that it always does, but it certainly can and sometimes does. So similarly, just by seeing Srila Prabhupada, there's a great potency in it. The devotees are affected and therefore they cry, and you know, it's quite an overwhelming thing, actually. So they're all different kind of, if one really wanted to get into it, they're all different aspects to it. I don't know if I mentioned, I may have, but Jamuna Devi wrote a letter to Prabhupada once when she was staying in London, worshipping Radha Landanishwara, saying, "Sometimes I look at the deities and I don't know how it happens, but tears come to my eyes." And like that. So the reply, Prabhupada's reply, is in the letters books, and Prabhupada tells her, yes, this is bhava. But anyway, she didn't come permanently to the level, that's a fact. But it was definitely bhava. All right, any other comments or questions?
Yes, back to what you were discussing before. I'm not sure if I understood properly. When you say that when you start your practice in Bhagavatam, that means you start in contact with the person, like for instance you were telling, for instance, Nandava.
Well, the real practice means that, yes.
I don't quite understand how it works. How you can, as you start to learn, how you can be already instructed by the person you are wishing to serve. Yeah. It's not true.
Yes. Well, the spiritual master is also certainly involved. It's not that you now drop the spiritual master because now you've got this, like a new spiritual master in a sense. You know, we should be careful not to become too mechanical about it. Just think, you know, that there's a system, you just follow, you know, step one, step two, press the button, and off you go. It's not quite like that. But the fact is that the real practice of Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti definitely includes that. That exactly how it's all working, don't ask me, because I'm sure you need some realization and I don't have it. But definitely that's, you know, it's stated very plainly as being an essential ingredient in it. In other words, not just that you like them. Oh, I like Nanda Maharaj. Not just like that, more than that. And the thing is that is because it's going on a very advanced level. You may not be on the level of bhava, but, you know, getting up towards that level, beyond anatha nivritti, nishta, we're talking like ruchi, asakti, these levels, just approaching bhava like this. So very, very advanced. And, well, perhaps, I think to understand it more clearly, or clearly, one would have to experience it probably. Prabhupada didn't really detail, because basically whenever he talks about it, the way in which he talks about it is, first of all, it's spontaneous. That's why he uses the word spontaneous. The natural implication there is that it's very natural. That the element of mechanicalness, which, you know, when we think of practicing something, then there's an element of mechanicalness in the idea. But this type of practice is not mechanical. It is spontaneous, even though it is practice. So it naturally develops by the grace of the spiritual master. And Prabhupada also, on a number of occasions in talking about this, said that at this point, you know, we talk of, there's the external spiritual master and then there's the Chetaguru. Now, on our level, the external spiritual master is playing a much more important role than the Chetaguru. But Prabhupada makes the point that on this level, the Chaita Guru also is playing a much more important part. I mean, than he was. Not necessarily more than the external guru, but that, you know, there's much more of a sense of communion and contact and direction from the Supreme Lord and, you know, apparently from these other devotees. I think that's all I can say. All I could be, I wouldn't say qualified to say, but all I know about it. Okay, so we'll see you all tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.